This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled weekend. Are you making plans, or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a playful exhibit designed to fool your eye, conversation with a renowned jazz pianist, or a look at a youth arts group that's using art as a vehicle for change, we've got answers. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. The pantheon of great New Orleans musicians is an extensive one, and there is no doubt that pianist Ellis Marcellus holds a richly deserved place in its upper echelons. His accomplishments as a musician and educator are of the highest order. WWNO's Fred Kasten recently interviewed Ellis Marcellus for the New Orleans Jazz National Historical Park's new Talkin' Jazz live interview series at the Old U.S. Mint, and talked with him about some of his formative experiences growing up in New Orleans and the Jefferson Parish community of Shrewsbury.
I was born in New Orleans, and after I was about 10, my dad bought some property in Jefferson Parish, and we moved to Shrewsbury.
In Shrewsbury, which is just upriver from the Orleans-Jefferson Parish line, Marcellus's father, Ellis Sr., who'd grown up in Summit, Mississippi, had room to keep some farm animals.
He was in the barn area, and he was milking his cow. So he told me, he said, go over there and get that feed and put it in a trough for the cow. So I got the bucket and put it in there, and I was kind of leery about this because, see, I was can't come from the city, you know. And, like, I was easing up on the trough to put it in, and the cow turned her head, which at the time I didn't know it, but she could smell the food. And she turned her head. I thought she was coming after me with the ball. So I dropped the bucket and ran. But eventually, I did become acclimated to just about all of the farm animals we had.
And soon got started with music, clarinet first, thanks to the inspiration of Artie Shaw and the Gramercy Five, and also some piano lessons. Marcellus enjoyed clarinet, but
the music of the day was primarily rhythm and blues. Mm-hmm. And so I got my folks to buy me a tenor saxophone because that was the instrument on the recordings that got most of the solos, you know.
Right.
Like Lee Allen, who was with Fats Domino, and there was a saxophone player named Batman, and he was playing with Roy Brown, who had a big hit on Good Rockin' Tonight.
Yeah.
And I learned that solo. And basically, that was the direction that I went in, because I realized that when I started to learn those solos, that I could get girls to look at me.
There's no art without sex, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. And so I went in, you know, moved into that direction. But around that same time, there was a radio show in New Orleans. I can't remember the title of the show, but the disc jockey, I think his name was Richard Rising. And he played modern jazz, you know, at that time. Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie.
Right.
And it was appealing to me. I didn't know what any of that really was. I knew I liked it.
Yeah, it just sounded good.
Right. And around that same time, around the spring of 1949, Dizzy Gillespie came through New Orleans with his big band. Hmm. And I heard, when I went to the concert and I heard that band, I knew that's what I want to do.
And it was around that time that Ellis Marcellus, playing tenor sax, picked up his first paying gig, thanks to his friend, pianist Roger Dickerson.
We had a rhythm and blues band, you know, called the Groovy Boys. Boy, that's a corny name. I think how that really came together, a friend of mine, Roger Dickerson, who is still in New Orleans right now, he was studying piano, and his piano teacher wanted to treat her students to like a, you know, a dance, a party, like. So she asked Roger about getting some guys together to play for them. At the end of the evening, which was quite a surprise, she passed the hat and collected some money and paid us, because we didn't expect to get paid. We were just having fun.
Having a good time.
So that was the first job that I ever played where we got paid, and it was $1.50 apiece. Which, you know, this was in what, 1948, 49, somewhere around that.
You're 14, and, 15 years old, something like that.
Yeah. And like, that wasn't too bad for somebody who was still living in their folks' house.
The Groovy Boys played school dances and the like for the next 4 years or so. Marcellus and Dickerson were eventually taking down $8 a pop. But Ellis also kept his hand in on piano.
I had started to study the piano with a piano teacher named Gene Costin Maloney, who my sister was studying with. And I learned from her how to practice the instrument. It had nothing to do with any genre of music. It wasn't like jazz, classical, or whatever. Even though most of what I had to practice would be considered classical music. But she had a much broader mind. Like most of the piano teachers, you couldn't even touch their pianos and play jazz on it.
Right.
Yeah, it was sacrilege. But she was a little different. She believed that you should learn to play this instrument and apply that to whatever direction that you want to go in.
Ellis Marcellus's conversion to full-time pianist was essentially completed when he was sitting in on keys one Sunday night at a Dewdrop Inn jam session.
I heard this saxophone player named Nathaniel Paralot. And this guy was so good. Until I actually stopped playing just to listen to him on the bandstand. But I said to myself, I said, well, I will never play the tenor saxophone again. And I never did. You know, I put it in the case and that was it. So then I started to reconstruct all of the information that my second piano teacher had given me and actually started to work on the instrument and learn a lot more about it.
Boy, did he ever. You can catch the great Ellis Marcellus most Friday nights at Snug Harbor Jazz Bistro, and it is always a beautiful thing to hear. For 89.9 WWNO. I'm Fred Kasten.
You can catch Ellis Marcellus with his quartet this Friday night at Snug Harbor. Today's interview with Mr. Marcellus was made possible in part thanks to support from the New Orleans Jazz National Historical Park, which presents the live interview series Talkin' Jazz with Fred Kasten, the last Friday afternoon of each month at 2 p.m. in the third floor auditorium of the old U.S. Mint. The series continues with Fred's interview of drummer Herlin Riley, Friday afternoon, January 25th at 2 p.m. Thank you. Young Aspirations Young Artist, or YAYA. A youth arts and mentoring group is bringing a new program to communities on the front lines of the state's coastal crisis. Writer Ian McNulty, who produces WWNO's Community Impact Series, takes a look at how YAYA is using art as a vehicle for change.
Freshwater diversions and dredges are among the methods aimed at slowing Louisiana's coastal erosion. When the BP oil spill struck, it was containment booms and sand berms. But now, some of the latest tools being deployed to help coastal communities here might be paintbrushes and sculpting chisels. That's thanks to a new program from the New Orleans-based nonprofit Young Aspirations Young Artists, better known as YAYA. The program is called Fresh Paths, and it's bringing public art, community art training, and a lot more to coastal Louisiana parishes.
Out of that initial impulse to create something beautiful and healing in response to the oil spill, we began to see how Fresh Paths could actually carry a larger message and could be both a healing response piece and at the same time a forward-thinking, forward-looking artwork about how we proactively deal with the ecological challenges that we face here in southern Louisiana.
That's Beatty Landis, executive director of YAYA. Her group has long been active in public schools around the New Orleans area, using a model of art training and youth mentoring to help young people express themselves, to channel their energies in positive ways, and to prepare them for the future, all while learning the business of art. Kids who experience YAYA during their high school years have the opportunity, once they graduate, to become mentors back in the schools. One of them is Ron Theron Ratcliffe. He started out with the program years ago as a reluctant teenager. But the environment he found, the artists he met, and the projects on which he got to work opened his own fresh path. Today, he's a professional artist and YAYA's studio director.
It's a place that they can come. They can be kind of creative. They can share their ideas. And I think what I've had to learn, I guess, through working with the program, or what I have learned, I guess, is that art gives me a voice.
And this lesson is what he now passes on to the young people he mentors at YAYA.
They have a voice as youth, as members of the community, and they can use art as that tool to kind of be heard, I think, in their homes, in their community, amongst their peers.
With Fresh Paths, the YAYA approach is being brought to communities and young people on the front lines of Louisiana's coastal crisis. The particular form of the Fresh Paths artworks, whether painting or installations or some other expressions, will be determined by the youth who take part.
They can use art to move what they see in their community as, you know, or what they see lacking in their community forward. They can use art to ask for something better, you know. I guess my idea is that we create something that would reflect hope and this ability to create change.
For Landis, it's an opportunity to show the larger community the full impact that art, art training, and mentorship can make.
So we're really excited to be able to celebrate our culture and celebrate creative expression, but also to demonstrate how powerful that creative expression can be when it's pivoted to address some of the challenges that we're living with.
Learn more about Young Aspirations Young Artists at WWNO.org. For WWNO, I'm Ian McNulty.
The Community Impact Series is made possible through support from the Greater New Orleans Foundation. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO. I'm Diane Mack. Well, it's billed as a mind-blowing experience. Lifelike, an international group show organized by the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis, continues its run at the New Orleans Museum of Art. The exhibit is a playful one. More than 50 artists are represented in a showcase of works from the late 60s to the present. It's an exploration of ordinary things in life that will have you questioning whether what you are looking at is real or an illusion. NOMA's Deputy Director for Curatorial Affairs, Lisa Rotundo McCord.
It's a contemporary take on an old art historical concept, which is trompe l'oeil, or to fool the eye. So many paintings from the 15th, 16th centuries, 17th centuries the artist tried to replicate reality in such a way that it looked as though it were real. It was a window to an actual still life where you could just put your hand in and take out an apple or a peach or a pear. So Lifelike is an exhibition that features 50 artists and starts with a historical survey of this idea in the modern moment, so from the 1960s to 1970s. So it features artists like Andy Warhol in the early galleries. But then it moves quite quickly to contemporary artists who are exploring similar ideas. And it goes through a variety of ways in which artists do this.
One example would be pop artist Andy Warhol's Brillo boxes.
Andy Warhol took a common everyday object and then he blew it up in scale and made it an art object. He actually painted the Brillo sign. But then we have artists who further that play with scale. So you have a lunch bag, for example, the kind that I used to use when I went to school and took my lunch, the sack lunch, except it's 8 feet high. But it looks just like a paper lunch bag. The best example of the scale is Robert Therrien's folding table and chairs. It's actually called No Title, but everyone will remember it as the card table and folding chairs. And he takes a very common object found in most people's homes that you use for extra seating for Thanksgiving dinner or family get-togethers or crawfish boils, that kind of thing, and he blows it up. So this folding table is 10 feet high, and the folding chairs are 12 feet high. And the first reaction from most visitors, you walk into the gallery, it's shown in the last gallery of the exhibition, is you stop and you laugh. Because it's like you've drunk the potion in Alice in Wonderland and you've shrunk in an instant. And then you're just like a little kid again. You look up and you can't believe that it's so large and you can't sit in the chair. And, you know, it just unleashes this whole torrent of thoughts about what is he doing? How do I get there? Do I walk around it? It's just amazing. And then right near there is another artist's work, which is a fully functional elevator. It's an elevator cab with the doors and the lights and a little button that you push, just like the elevator for any multi-story building, except it's 8 inches high. So it's the other end of the spectrum. So they're right next to each other. So it's a fun and just a fun moment. They're working with serious themes, but they make you laugh. They make you laugh and look again and say, what is that? And is it real? That's really the question you walk around with.
Brooke Minto can attest to the playful nature of Lifelike. She is NOMA's new Deputy Director of Development.
You know, I walked underneath the table and chairs, and it's just so giant, so oversized. You feel like a kid again. You feel like you're in lower school or middle school. You're on the playground. There's this huge, you know, playground 10 feet taller than you are. And it just transports you, takes you back to a period in your childhood that really is wonderful. And you kind of lose yourself and you enjoy. And you look around at all of these wonderful objects and you think about these great memories of childhood, of your school days, of friendships, you know, past and people in your past. And it really is an evocative experience.
Paintings, sculpture, photography, drawings, video, and installations are featured in this transformation of commonplace objects. Lisa Rotundo McCord.
One of the installations is, it's really the core of the exhibition, and it's by an artist named Keith Edmire, and it's a kitchen. And again, if you look at a photograph of it, it just looks like almost like a interior scene, a still life with an interior. But what he has done is recreated his childhood kitchen, the kitchen that he grew up in. And instead of using canvas and paint and doing a sort of trompe l'oeil effect, he's actually recreated the whole environment. So there's a real stove, a real refrigerator, cabinets, formica, countertops, the sink, the table, the light fixtures, and then this fabulous 70s foil wallpaper. So some of the things are vintage. Some of the things he's made to recreate what he couldn't find. And the wallpaper he thought he could find because it had been in production for a long time, but he found actually nobody had it. So he actually had to make the design and then have a company refashion this foil wallpaper. It's very hip, very cool, you know, silver with orange and green. It's fabulous. But when you walk in, it's like you're walking into a still life. You're just totally transported to another time and place. It's a remarkable effect.
Rotundo McCord and Minto both say it's an experience New Orleanians will connect with. Lifelike is on view at the New Orleans Museum of Art through February 3rd. And we have something extra in our Lanyap Corner. Rhino Contemporary Crafts Company is holding a children's workshop this weekend. Jewelry artist Betsy Myers Green will guide kids in making mixed-media masks for Mardi Gras. Reservations are suggested as space is limited. The workshop will be held from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, January 12th at Rhino Gallery, 333 Canal Place Mall, 2nd floor. More info at Artbox Rhino, R-H-I-N-O, at gmail.com. Southern Rep Theater continues its new play program with 3x3, the one acts by Kerry Cahill, Michael Santos, and John Broder. One act plays written by local playwrights. 3x3, the one acts, runs January 14th and 15th, 7:30 p.m. at Mid-City Theater, 3540 Toulouse Street. You can check the website, southernrep.com, for more info. The Don Moose Jameson Heritage School of Music is the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation's principal education program. The free school is accepting new students ages 11 to 17. Auditions are being held Saturday, January 12th, 10 a.m. at Dillard University's Cook Fine Arts Center. Auditions are open to students from throughout the greater New Orleans region. Students must own their own instruments and, except for piano and drums, bring them to the audition. The Heritage School accepts beginning to advanced students. More info at heritageschoolofmusic.org. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our show is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next week at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.